Hi, my name is Sam Limbs, and welcome to part one of episode number 157 of my 60 music podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. First of all, I'd like to welcome all of you to part one of episode number 157 of my 60 music podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. I'm Sam Williams, and for those of you who are just now discovering this podcast, either on the Apple Podcast app, or in Stitcher, or in iHeartRadio, or in Google Play Music, or on Spotify, and you're wondering, so what the heck is? I'm just give you a brief description of what the show is all about. Okay, so I'm Sam Limbs, and I'm a 26-year-old songwriter slash producer, but I'm also a 60 music fan slash expert slash turned. Each week of this podcast, I take one song by one artist and 60, split the show in two parts. First part of the show, to talk about my opinion of the song and why I think it's so good, or why I think it sucks, and to my own personal analysis on the arrangement of the song, which will include the chords, melody, and lyrics. And second part of the show, dig deep into the history behind the track. And that part of the show, to talk about who wrote the song, who produced it, what studio the song was recorded at, whether it be the session musicians or band members that played on it, talk about the history behind the song, where it's worth the song, the producer has produced it, the artist that recorded it, and history by the label the song was released on, and the peeps song went up originally on the Billboard Hot 100 charts when first came out, the history behind the label the song was released on, the studio the song was recorded at, and the year and month the song was released. All that is in the second part of the show. Now, before we move on this week's episode of the podcast, I just want to acknowledge that I haven't forgotten about you guys. I know it's been a week since I put out an episode. Well, that's honestly because last week was my birthday, so I took that week off. And yes, I turned 26 on November 2nd. So, yeah, I mean, that's what I usually do every year for my podcast. I always take the week of my birthday off. And but I always resume putting out new episodes the week after. And really, I don't have too much to say about turning 26, but all I really have to say about it is that my life is completely different now versus when I was 25 and 24 and most year and pretty much all years of my life, because I went through a lot of changes, during when I was 25. I mean, you know, my living situation changed. I mean, I put out music for the first time in so long. And new music, and I lost a lot of weight, and a lot of things changed. I wrote a lot of new songs, so I went through a lot of change this past year, and it's kind of hard to see where things are going to go now that I'm 26, but we'll see. I mean, I'm kind of just sort of, figuring this out and just trying to manage, my new sort of circumstances that I'm in right now, but other than that, as far as what's coming up with this podcast, I'm actually really excited because I'm gonna be doing some things that I haven't done in a really, really long time with this show, and I'm very, very excited because I mean I've only done one interview this year for this podcast, just one, and that was with Steve Boone back in February, and to be honest with you, there might be two more coming up and another two more coming up after that. So basically what I'm trying to say is that I'm actually probably going to be doing some interviews really, really soon. I've already talked about who I might have on the show who are still interested. Artie Rip, the guy who allegedly screwed over Billy Joel, the music publisher, label head back in the 60s. Brooks Arthur, who still wants to do an interview episode. He's still interested and he wants to do it after Thanksgiving, the 60 music recording engineer, and Frank Jekyll and Pat Carr, 1910 Frugum Company, they want to do theirs after the holidays. But what might be coming up really, really soon is someone brand new that just came up recently. And, this person's kind of interesting because I haven't done an interview like this in a while. And this is from an area of my podcast I've covered a couple different times, but not a whole lot, because I know that this part of 60 music history has been, educated and preserved throughout the annals of music history. And it's one that sort of, this company got a lot of recognition, and they're pretty big. I mean, most people are aware of them. I mean, everybody knows the songs that this label put out, and I've covered them on my podcast once or twice before. In fact, I interviewed one of the biggest songwriters from that label. I talked to him on my show. Not one of my personal favorite interviews I've done on my show, but that's another story. I mean, but basically, the person I'm going to have on was someone that was part of the crew of studio musicians that they used on their records. And the thing is that this is going to be really, really interesting because she is not someone you would know by name. She wasn't somebody that was... she was an integral part of the sound of these records because she played on quite a few hits. I mean, like, she's on a lot of sessions, and she was a part of the whole Funk Brothers session crew of guys that they used in Hitsville, USA, you know, it's in Studio A and Studio B. I mean, she was very much a part of that group. I mean, she played on everyone's records, from Marvin Gaye, the Supremes, the Four Tops, the Temptations. I mean, she was... You know, she played on so many records, but the thing is that, first of all, she wasn't black, and second of all, she was a girl, and the only woman as part of that whole scene as a session player, and she was a flute player. But the thing is that even though it's not James Jamerson, it's not Robert White, it's not Earl Van Dyke, it's not Benny Benjamin, it's not anyone very specific and recognizable, but still... Her playing was so distinct and so, part of that sound that when you listen to songs like Reach Out, I'll Be There by the Four Tops, you can instantly pick her out. She sticks right out on those records. And even on songs like My Whole World Ended by David Ruffin, you can pick her out almost immediately. I mean, she was just, I mean, her parts were so... forward, up and forward, just like James Jamerson. She was right there as one of the most recognizable Motown musicians of that time, and I can't wait to have her on. Her name is Dana Hartwick, just in case you're wondering who she is. I can't wait to talk to her because she has to have a lot of good stories about the Funk Brothers and the whole Detroit music scene at the time, and just talking about, you know, Motown and Berry Gordy and, you know, all the different A&R heads. I mean, I love to hear her stories about, David DePitty and Paul Reiser, the Motown arrangers, you know, and just talk about, you know, all the musicians she worked with, like Eddie Willis and Joey Messina, all those guys. I can't wait to hear her stories on these records. I mean, I'm pretty sure that's her playing flute on Special Occasion by Smokey Robinson and the Miracles. I want to bet that's probably her playing that flute. But I'm very, very excited to have her on. I mean, she came in a little bit later. I mean, 66, but Motown was still really, really in the prime by that time. So she really was a part of that whole scene, very much so. I mean, she was essentially a Funk Brother, even though she was a girl. So she's technically a Funk Sister, but you get the idea. I mean, she's going to be on my podcast probably in a few weeks. I normally take the week off for Thanksgiving, but I actually, you know, since we're doing it on a weekend, I think I might actually put out an episode on Thanksgiving this year. So, and hopefully I'll end this year with another podcast interview from Brooks Arthur. That's probably going to happen really soon. So really excited because I haven't done any interviews in a long time, you know, and it's been really, really tough for me to get people on. So I'm really excited to do more interviews because, like I said, I mean, this podcast is about me. It's a millennial's perspective on this great music from the 60s. But at the same time, it's always good to have people on from that era on my show because it gives to hear their stories and their perspective on this stuff and also get their stories down so that way they're permanently there on the internet long after they die. So that's another thing and the reason why I have people like that on my podcast. So that's really cool. And let's get started in this week's song. Moving on, let's get started in this week's song, shall we? Okay, so a couple of things happened to me while I took a break from listening to this from doing this podcast. And it's interesting because I actually got some really good inspiration for a new song that I'm writing right now. And by the way, I actually am playing one more show before the year is over, and that's on December 7th at Bar Lubitsch. And my set time is 9:30. And what you're going to get when you see me perform that night is that I'm actually going to be debuting the song that I wrote actually the week of my birthday. And it's a really, really interesting song. And it was inspired by a conversation I was having with a girl at a bar when I was at a show. the weekend of my, like, basically the Halloween weekend, but my birthday is 2 days after Halloween, so it's basically right around then anyways. The song I'm actually doing this week for my podcast kind of coincides with it a little bit. It's different, but still kind of the same sort of, feelings and emotions that are kind of in the song are sort of how I feel about her specifically. A lot of the what's going on emotionally with the lyrics of the song are sort of how there's definitely correlation there. And I'll explain to you more of that once I get into the talking about this song more. But, the song I'm about to do, it's another breakup song, right? And, you know, it's not necessarily specifically about divorce. It's not like Husbands and Wives, like what I did a couple weeks ago. But it's one that is so dramatic and so it captures your attention when you listen to it. You know, it brings you in immediately. When the first couple seconds of it, you're drawn into what's going to happen. You get this sort of bone-chilling sort of like feeling in your throat, and you're like, whew, the song feels so heavy, but it's so good. And you just, you literally get chills when you hear this introduction, and when the song kind of, it starts out kind of slow, kind of just, it really sort of starts small and then just gets bigger and bigger, and then it just hits you so hard. You know, it's one of those songs that it's so emotionally charging and so dramatic and just so unbelievably good. I mean, compared to the last song I did, which was on Halloween, like the Monster Mash, this song is so beefy as far as the chord changes is concerned. It's very, very interesting. It's unexpected and it's weird. And the weirdest part, I'll explain to that, and when I actually analyze a song, is not the part you expect, but still, so strange, just really, really weird, but still just so sexy and just so, like, emotionally charging and just really, really just so dramatic. And I can't wait to talk about the song with you guys, because it's just unbelievable. It's just insane how good this song is. Okay, so the song came out in December 1964. It was recorded by a group called Little Anthony and the Imperials. The name of the song is called Hurt So Bad.
I know you don't know what I'm going through, standing here looking at you. Well, let me tell you that it hurts so bad. It makes me feel so sad.
Wow. This is just a monster of a song. Holy shit. The song is just incredible. It's just unbelievably good. It's just amazing. I mean, it's just like, wow. I mean, that arrangement just hits you with a ton of bricks. And today, we're going to be talking about what makes a song so great, both musically and lyrically. But first, let's get into the song's music first. Okay, so we got a lot going on here as far as the music of the song is concerned. There's so much happening, and it's so weird, and it can kind of almost seem a little uncomfortable hearing the song because... But that's the thing, is that the song isn't necessarily the most comfortable song to listen to, because it's very dramatic and very emotional, but it's just unbelievably good. But before we kind of dive into the chord progression, let's talk about the arrangement for a minute, because the arrangement in this song is just so brilliant, and so it's so perfectly mapped out, and it's just so chills-inducing. It's like, whew. I mean, this is one of those songs that it's almost like you're watching a dramatic movie. It's one of those songs, because it starts out with the drums, and then you hear the drummer play that part, right, with the kick and the hi-hat, and you just hear that, and then you hear the piano player play those bass notes on the piano, and then you hear the percussive sound of that really, really sort of like, it almost kind of sounds like the guitar player isn't even playing any, the strings are muted and he's just chicking, he's creating this sort of palm muting pattern with his hand, and he's using the guitar as sort of a percussive sort of instrument where he's hitting he's muting the strings and he's just hitting the strings with his other hand muted, and he's just, you know, palm muting them and creating this very sort of percussive chick sound. And it sounds really, really cool in the song. And you hear that, and you hear those bass piano notes, and you hear those chords come in, and you're just like, wow, this is just really, this song is about to take you on a journey, you know. And you hear the piano, and you hear the string arrangement, and you just hear everything kind of come together. Because here's the thing. The song starts out small. You hear, because most of the time, it's you hear those piano chords, and you hear the drums, and then you hear things sort of, you don't really hear the background vocals come in right away, but when you kind of, it kind of puts you in that mood, right? You hear those bass piano notes, and you hear the chords, and then you hear the piano player come in full force. He plays the chords of the song, and then you hear the background vocals come in. And then they do this really sort of dramatic, tension-inducing sort of thing where their vocals just get a little bit louder, and then the chorus literally explodes. This is when the song, just the dramaticism really, really is at its high point in the song. In the chorus, it's just unbelievable because you hear the background vocals. It almost kind of sounds like it's in the Imperials, but it's also a bunch of session singers too. Because that's, you know, because they kind of give the impression that there is a session, singing group singing along with them. Because holy mackerel, when they sing that part, it's just unbelievable. I mean, wow. I mean, they're just like, I mean, it's just, and look, there's some rhythm things going on here to really sort of create sort of, you know, dramatic tension going on, specifically in the chorus. Because in the chorus, things kind of start and stop, and you hear the sort of very staccato rhythm going on towards the end of the chorus. And again, it's almost like and you have the orchestra sort of playing along with that. And again, it's, if I were to compare this to something, it would almost sort of be like you're watching a score to a movie, like a very dramatic movie, you know, and you hear the tension playing out with the scene of the couple sort of falling apart. That's kind of what's happening here. You hear that, and it's just, again, it's very symphonic, very, you know, very picturesque, and you hear that, and it's just unbelievable. And you just, I mean, you can tell that, you know, it's just the dramatic tension is just really, really there in this song. And it's again, like, you know, you just, the singers just, you know, really, really create sort of this whole, so it's almost, there's a very, you know, the drama in the chorus is just unbelievable, especially the lead vocal, because he just sort of like wails all over the place, and it's just so like really, really intense. And it kind of, the song kind of has its peaks and valleys. I mean, the section kind of repeats itself once you kind of get into the second verse. You kind of hear the thing kind of start all over again, except the strings are a little bit different this time around the second verse, but still very eerie and very just so like, man, sort of, it has sort of a haunting quality to it. And you hear that, and it's just unbelievable. I mean, the arrangement is just incredible. But probably the best part of the song, which is really when it gets the most dramatic, is in the bridge. Because in the bridge, after the second chorus, it's short. It's not brief. I mean, sorry, it's not long. The bridge just doesn't go on forever and ever. It's very brief. But right before it gets to the last chorus, before the song fades out and the chorus just repeats, right before it gets to the last chorus, and you hear this triplet buildup happening towards the end of the bridge. And this is after the rhythm slightly changes up a little bit. You hear that, and again, this is they're playing some staccato rhythms to sort of create that dramatic tension. But that triplet buildup before the song gets to the last chorus is so, like, you know, ear capturing, and it's just so, like, this is when the tension is at its highest. And that's the thing, is that it's kind of like a pre-chorus, because it's creating all this, it's building up all this tension, all this sort of, you know, pent-up energy happening here. And it's just building and building and building and building. And then as soon as the tension is released, it explodes. And then you just hear the song going to full-on high gear at the last chorus. And then it's just, and that's unfreaking believable. I love that part of the song. I mean, when those triplets sort of, when it does that, and you hear the tension just really, really just sort of building up so much. It's building and building and building and building, and then it just explodes into that last chorus. Oh my God, that is just so cool. And it's just unbelievable. It's just insane. And look, I mean, you know, there's another cool part about this song is that the chord progression is really, really cool, because this is, it's kind of, it's very unexpected, because you got this thing, right, where it kind of, you kind of move between, you know, the A minor 7, the G major 7, and the verses of the song. And by the way, this song is an E minor, but it kind of flirts with G major a little bit too, so it kind of flirts with the relative major a lot. I mean, for example, in the verses, right? It sounds like a 2 minor 7 to 1 major 7 if you were in G major, but you're in E minor technically. So it would technically be you know, 3 minor 7 to you know, actually 4 minor 7 to 3 major 7. So you go A minor to G major 7. So you kind of hear that. And then basically, and then you hear the D minor, and that's in that, whoa, that's really unexpected, because I don't even think D minor exists in the realm of E minor. It's a borrowed chord. I'm pretty sure it's a borrowed chord. It exists in the realm of A minor, but not in the realm of E minor. So when you hear that borrowed chord, you're like, whoa, that was unexpected. And then you hear that borrowed chord, and then you hear the second chord after that, which is again E minor 7, and then you hear A major, and you're like, whoa, what's going on here? This is pretty weird, because A major, you know, isn't even in E minor either. It's not. It's, you know, because it's E and then F sharp, G, A, and then, you know, A. It's so you hear the A major, and you're like, holy shit, what the fuck is going on? Because it's supposed to be A minor. Like, ooh, this is totally beefy, totally unexpected. And then you hear that, B major 7, which kind of sounds like E flat minor too. I mean, it could be either one. If you play those two chords, it'll sound exactly the same. It'll still sound pretty much correct. And then the chorus, it does this thing where it's like, you know, it could be E minor to B minor, or C major 7 to B major 7. You know, whatever one's, you know, it could work either or. If you play those two versions, it's still fine. I mean, and it ends in the E minor at the end, and that's really, really cool. And then it starts back up again. But it's just so cool. Those chord changes are just unbelievable. I mean, like, wow. It sounds just incredible. And then it kind of just does the same thing in the bridge. It kind of goes from, again, C major 7, B major 7, or E minor 7 to B minor 7, you know, depending on, or, you know, E minor to B minor. I mean, it does that again, and it's just unbelievable. It just sounds so beefy. Actually, so technically, I meant to say C major 7 to B minor 7, so it's actually, but again, like, you can also play E minor too. E minor works the same as C major 7, so you can kind of play both chords and it'll still sound pretty close. C major 7 to B minor 7, so you kind of hear that, and again, it goes in that progression again in the bridge, and you just, and again, it kind of, the rhythm changes up in the bridge, and then basically, it kind of slides into that. Once you kind of get to the last bit of the chorus of the song, and then once you kind of get into the last chorus, you know, that triplet buildup section, and that's really, really cool, because then you kind of hear the thing sort of build up into that C major 7 chord and into the last chorus, and whoa, that's unbelievable too. I mean, when you listen to that, it's just insane. I mean, this is one of those songs that is just, It's crazy. I mean, it's just insane how dramatic the arrangement of the song is. It's so eerie and so, like, it just gives you the chills whenever you listen to it. It's just really, really cool. And I love the percussion on this record. I love the string arrangement. I mean, it's just so good. And the drums are really good on this song too. The timpani, the drum playing on the song, it's perfect because it's the exact sort of dramatic drum playing you need for a record like this. And and musically, it evokes the dramatic sort of tension building sort of release sort of things that Burt Bacharach was doing at the same time, even though this wasn't a Burt Bacharach song. He had nothing to do with this record, even though it sounds a lot like all the stuff he was doing at that time. So it definitely has an influence. But now we're going to talk about the song's lyrics. Okay, so now we're going to talk about the lyrics for the song and why the song is really, really relatable and why it's kind of relatable for me too. But first, let me start off this by saying, start off with the talking about the lyrics of the song by asking you this question. Have you ever gotten into a relationship with someone and, you know, once that happens, you know, even if you start out as friends and then you get into that relationship with them, you know, how you see them in person changes. You know, when you see them in person, you cannot see them the same way that you saw them before when you were just friends with them. And when you get into a relationship with them, and if that relationship fails or doesn't work out, seeing them in person again can be very, very painful. And this is also the same if things don't work out, or it's short term, or if it's friends with benefits and you get hurt or something bad happens. And when you see them again in person, it can bring up so many different emotions. And even if you talk to them, or, you know, someone gives you mixed signals, or, you know, you almost get it with them and it doesn't happen, seeing them in person again can get very, very awkward. And this song is all about that, because I'm sure if you're listening to this podcast, even if you're a millennial, if you've ever had an ex-girlfriend or boyfriend and you saw them in person again, you can almost feel the exact same feelings that this person is feeling in the song. It's very, and again, it brings up so many different emotions. And in this particular song, he's hurting when he sees his ex-girlfriend, because, you know, he wishes that she would give him a second chance and they would get back together and they would be boyfriend and girlfriend again. And it's really, really just making him, you know, borderline cry, or just making him so emotional that it feels like that's just not going to happen. And again, like the tension here is just unbelievable. And I love the way the song starts out, because it starts out like the first couple lyrics really grab your attention. Because when you listen to this, you just sort of think, okay, I know you, don't know what I'm going through, standing here looking at you. I mean, that, hearing that, and you're just like, okay, what is going on? I'm locked in. I don't know what's going to happen next, but I want to find out what's going to happen next, and I'm not going to pay attention to anything else for the next 2 minutes and 15, 20 seconds. I'm going to hear the rest of the song and find out exactly what is going on here. And even I love how in the second verse, you know, things get kind of complicated. There's some drama happening, because he says he thinks, you know, other people think he's doing all right after the breakup. But then other people say, hey, you know, she's got somebody new now. Don't get in the way with that. And I'm sure that you've been in that situation where you see your ex-girlfriend or boyfriend and they're dating somebody new, and you're like, don't try to mess with that, right? I mean, it's the same sort of thing happening with this song. And you just, like, when you hear that lyric, you're like, oh my God, I know exactly what he's going through. And I'm sort of experiencing this too, because I've been in some awkward situations with girls where, you know, I almost got laid with them, or, you know, they gave me mixed signals. And I've been in those situations, and seeing them in person again will never be the same for me. And that's how the singer of the song is when he is, you know, singing the song. He's describing that. And he's just saying that we were in a relationship and now we are not. But if I were to see you again, it would just bring up so many different emotions. It would just really make me break down. And it would hurt me so much just to see you again, knowing that you're with somebody new and it's not going to happen with us again. I mean, I'm sure you've been there once before, even if you're a millennial, even if you've never heard the song before in your life, even if you never didn't grow up listening to this kind of music. I know you've been in that situation before. I mean, it's very, very common, and it's common, and it's applicable even if you've never even been in a relationship. If you've just gotten some awkward situations with girls, you know, or with a guy, it's hard to see that person the same way again, you know, especially if you're friends with them. So, and this song sort of captures those emotions so perfectly. It's such a great song, and it's very relatable. And look, this isn't a Beatles song. This isn't a Beach Boys song. This isn't, like, you know, a song by really huge. This isn't a Door song. This isn't by a mainstream 60s group. This isn't Janis Joplin. This is New York up-tempo soul, you know, with the song originally written by a Italian white guy. So, I mean, you have the sort of relatability with a song like this, coming from someone who wasn't Lennon McCartney and who wasn't Jagger Richards or Brian Wilson or Jim Morrison. I mean, just to hear a song like this being so relatable, have it not come from one of the bigger names, is really, really cool. But again, this, again, a very relatable song. And I mean, the tension building in the bridge again is just unbelievable. It's so good. And I love how it's just like, you know, he's really, really desperate to get her back, but he knows it's not going to happen. And you can hear it in his voice. And that's the other part about the song that's so cool, is that the other thing that makes the song so great as far as the dramaticism on this record is Little Anthony's performance. Because Anthony Gordine, who, by the way, the guy who's singing lead, his name's Anthony Gordine. His stage name is Little Anthony because he's a short guy. But anyways, the performance he gives in this record is so, you know, dramatic and so, like, I love the high range that he's in. And I love the ad-libbing sort of, that last chorus, you know, the when it's repeated, it's just so good. I mean, he really, really amps up the tension on this record, and the Imperials do a great job of doing that too. But it's just so good. I mean, I love this record, and it's very, very relatable, even to someone like me. So, that concludes this week's episode. So that concludes part one of episode number 157 of my 60 Music Podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. I'm Sam Williams, and if you've never heard this song before and you're a millennial and you listen to it and you're like, oh my God, this song is amazing. It's exactly what I've been through once before. I know exactly what the singer is feeling like, and it's totally relatable. I can definitely relate to him. And you're a young person, and you didn't grow up listening to this music, but you love the song so much. You never heard it before until you listened to this podcast and you heard it from me first. Please email me at samltwilliaicloud.com. You can also reach out to me on Instagram at iHeartOldies to check out more of my original music at samwilliamsmusic.net. Now, another social media platform you can follow me on that I'm posting on a lot more frequently these days is TikTok. And TikTok is it's an up-and-coming social media platform that's on the cusp of blowing up, like I said before on the show. So if you want to follow me on TikTok, where I post about, among various things, things like I tell the stories behind the songs off my EP, please do follow me on there. It's the same username as Instagram, iHeartOldies. I would love it if you guys could do that. I'll put the link to my TikTok account in the description of this episode's podcast. And also, you can check out, as per usual, my EP that I put out this year. I'm working on new music, by the way. So there's stuff coming, but I just don't know when it's going to come out. And I just wrote a song last week, so I am working on new stuff. So it will come out eventually, but for right now, you guys can enjoy the stuff I have out already under my EP Turquoise Apricot, under my new stage name Sam Lil Williams. Please go check that out. Check those out, and love if you guys can let me know what you think of that. You can do that by emailing me at samltw@icloud.com, or you can also reach out to me on Instagram at iHeartOldies. And yeah, so another thing you can check out is the official two interviews I did, with Honk Magazine. Shout out LA. We'll love if you guys can read those and let me know what you think of those interviews. Love it if you guys are inspired to meet me in person after reading those interviews. And if you'd like to do that, please let me know by emailing me at samltwilliatcloud.com. And yeah, also you can check out the official Spotify and YouTube playlist of this podcast. You'll be able to find all the songs I've talked about on my show so far, including some of the ones I've mentioned in interview episodes. If you would like to suggest me songs to talk about next time podcast they haven't yet, please email those ideas to me at samltwilliatcloud.com. You can also reach out to me on Instagram at iHeartOldies. And everything you can check out is the official music video put out this year for Keeper in My Back Pocket. Love, love that song. Love if you guys could check that out, and you can let me know what you think of that video. I put a lot of hard work into it. It's one of my favorite things that I've did this year. Would love if you guys could check that out. You can do that by emailing me at samltwilliatcloud.com. You can also reach out to me on Instagram at iHeartOldies, and I'd love to hear what you think of that. So please let me know if there's certain songs that you like from that playlist, and you want to suggest to me more songs I should do on my podcast, actually haven't yet, please email those ideas to me. And you can also check out the official Redbubble merch store for this podcast. And I have a couple new logos up. My Turquoise Apricot new merch is up, and you can check that out too. It's my new logo for the EP I've dropped this year. Would love if you guys could check that out as well. It's super, super dope. I'm very, very excited, for that. And yeah. So the links to those in the description of this episode of this podcast, so please go check those out. Again, very, very excited to do these interview episodes, because it's been so long since I've done interview episodes, and just to have a bunch of them line up is going to be really, really cool, and I can't wait to do some, because I haven't done any in a very, very long time, so this is going to be great. So I'm Sam Williams, and thank you guys for joining me for this week's episode of my podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. Until next week, please keep things groovy.